Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans, from Belmont Park. Sunny, beautiful, no wind, and a lineup of Christophe Clement runners in the classic way that they back up to the fence. And we are 24 hours out from Belmont Stakes Day. And first order of business, before we talk Royal Ascot, before we do anything, is noting that yesterday the word came, mid-afternoon. There is a two-day pick five, two races today, three races, the grade three of the grade ones tomorrow, and be aware, it's a dollar pick five. And I did the handicapping. I'm going to have to tighten up. Going to have to tighten up the final decisions to make the bet reasonable and palatable, but it should be a lot of fun. It's races 7 and 9 today, a state bred turf allowance for fillies and mares, and the Sir Cat. And then tomorrow, that's the 7th and 9th today, then the Acorn, Jaipur, and Belmont tomorrow. And it does feel like, you know, especially if you're marrying yourself to Tis the Law, it feels like a fun bet, because a couple of the races, including today, the two races today, the state bred fillies and mares, including, I forgot to bring it up with Tony yesterday. Tony was firing on all cylinders with the crop discussion. But Collegeville Girl comes up for Richie Vega, and she's going to try turf in here. She's a Spitestown. No reason why she can't take to the turf, but I thought you had to spread a little bit in that first leg. The Sir Cat competitive, six on the inner turf, three-year-olds, Jack and Noah, I suppose the lean is slightly Chimney Rock from Mike Maker with Jose Ortiz, Mrs. Weber and Mark Cassie. Chestnut, I think, fits. Turned aside for Linda Rice. So that gets you going. And then into the sequence, the pick three, the grade one pick three tomorrow. So we'll get Nick's opinion. We'll probably get Dave Grenig. Dave will be by later, second half of the show. He was tied up until at least 10:30. We'll see what he thinks. Mike Beer, I think, is going to join us at some point as well. And a tradition for many years, and since this is not your typical lead-up to Belmonte, Ron Anderson, for years, would join us, usually fairly early in the week, Tuesday or Wednesday, and go through Joel Rosario's mounts, and you would get Ron's unvarnished opinion. Ron would tell you what, you know, going into the big card, what he felt were the best chances and so forth. But Ron will be by, I think, at some point in the next, probably in the first half of the show. And we're going to touch base with Marty McGee as well here early in this hour. Yesterday, I kind of alluded to what's going on around the country and North America too, of course, Woodbine and beyond. But the Churchill Stakes action tomorrow, quite nice. And also at Santa Anita, we'll probably just let Jay handle the Wilshire and the Las Barrera, the Snow Chief as well tomorrow at Santa Anita, and at Churchill, the Audubon, 100,000, mile and an eighth for three-year-olds, and then the very deep and pretty contentious. I mean, if you don't just give in to factor this for Brad Cox, if you just if you think that he's vulnerable, then it's competitive, because there's about literally at least five that are win candidates. So the Wise Dan tomorrow, and nice card to Churchill. In addition to those two stakes, and we also want to talk to Marty. The news that came out of Churchill and Ellis about another Audubon, the Audubon at, I assume the Audubon at Churchill is named for Audubon Park, but the Audubon Oaks at Ellis Park has been away for 11 years, and they're going to use it as a prep toward the Kentucky Oaks. It's getting some points, and of course the Ellis Park Derby, which kind of knew would be a points race. So we'll let Marty riff on that storyline out of Louisville. We've got, obviously, day four from Royal Ascot, and just minutes ago, another late start. They were late getting out of the gate. They had real trouble. In fact, I think they left a filly for the Albany, for the Group 3 Albany. I think they left a filly behind the gate. And ultimately, Dandala, the winner, Ben Curtis, and won off by herself. I mean, really an impressive performance. And in the earlier action, that big handicap that opened the card back at 8:15. I did not see it live, and I believe it was it Keep Busy? I want to say it was there was a very logical horse in there. Art Power, and Keep Busy. 1-2 in there. And in fact, Kev Humphreys, you know, obviously gave in to the fact that Art Power was going to be a strong favorite, but it was in fact the runner-up that was his top tab. So again, if you are playing with Kev's ideas, utilize his price ideas, meld them with the favorites, because he's not he almost never is gonna key off of a favorite. Once in a while, you know, some of the ones that, you know, like Stradivarius yesterday, and people widely hailing that performance. And I'm gonna keep hailing Onassis's performance for those of you that were listening to the replay. In fact, I got a couple of got a text or two and a couple of emails, and then a few people that latched on yesterday, whether it was during the conversation with Dick Powell or just leading up to the race itself, and some people got a big kick out of that. I got a big kick out of it, 53 and change. But it was a good day yesterday for our audience, because Vance Hansen, as well, with a great set of opinions in the Jersey. So today, five more races at Royal Ascot, and then Saturday, probably the biggest interest for us, right, in North America, is Sharing and Graham Motion, and that'll come again time wise in the Coronation that goes off at 9:25. So set yourself a 9:20 reminder, or you could just be latched on right from 7:40 a.m. Eastern tomorrow the first, because they've got even a bigger card than we've seen all week. They got an eight race card tomorrow to close out what's been different, but that's been the watchword, right, for everything that's been going on. And Toby Sheets for the Asmussen Barn. That's been the watchword, of course, everywhere. Let's get a few pieces before we get to Marty McGee. Let's get a few pieces of news and some of the things out of the way that I just know we won't get to later. And I suppose a good opportunity. Happy Father's Day Sunday to everybody. My father tomorrow, 91st birthday tomorrow. And I can't go see him, but and even... under I mean, under any circumstance, this COVID scenario, they're staying sequestered. So I said, you know, can I come and sit on the porch? We got a back porch. I said, I'll sit on the back porch through the screen. And so, no, that we've all been ruled off from seeing my father. But happy birthday and Father's Day to my father, but to fathers everywhere, obviously. And when it comes to today, you do have ovals we've been waiting for. How about not just Penn National and Prairie Meadows getting started, but I don't want to let today go by without a nod to Pleasanton. Pleasanton kicks off today as well. So that caught my eye. I didn't want to forget it. Meanwhile, elsewhere, and yesterday you had a couple of stakes. Let me slip this in. You had stakes at Thistledown, the William Petro Memorial Drill It for Dr. Bob Gorham and Mass Thoroughbreds, important and notable, of course, in the Ohio breeding and racing community. And then in the other stake, in the George Lewis Memorial, Mobile Solution, a five-year-old mobile gelding for Jeff Radosevich and Gerald Silver, the owner. They win the Lewis, so a couple of nice stakes. And I should note in between, because I printed the chart, Dr. Bob and Mass Thoroughbreds, they won the allowance in between the two stakes. So wanted to slip that in. I got to go back to Indiana for you for a minute and talk about yesterday's 11.99% pick five. This was unbelievable yesterday. I mean, the Canterbury and Indiana pick five storyline, which we're going to keep following. Yesterday, you had three favorites. The first leg, the third leg, and the final leg. $6.40, $7, and $4.80. And then you had one tough horse to find. There was a maiden special weight going 4.5. With almost all first-time starters. So, you know, it's going to be a mystery. And, in fact, John Ortiz, perfect mistake, who was on the AE list. So maybe even a little added wrinkle. Perfect mistake, pays 26.20. That was the tough horse, sixth choice. And then there was also Marvin Johnson in the Indiana Bred allowance as the eighth that paid 11.80 as the third choice. So you put this together. Three favorites, a tricky maiden read, and, you know, a straightforward 5-1 winner, 9-2, 5-1 in a nine horse field. The parlay, $1,038. What did it pay? $6,428. I mean, this just is. It's that's six times. I mean, we've been talking two and three times on a daily basis, but this was six times. So I just hard not to be intrigued. For those of you that have been excited about the Canterbury one, 10% pick five, you didn't even get to it yesterday because how about the storm that that came roaring through Shakopee yesterday after the third race? That was it. Good night, everybody. that was all. Yeah, there was no chance. So they washed out yesterday after three races at Canterbury. The Churchill action yesterday before we get back to New York. And I did want to mention from yesterday because we had talked to Tommy Drury. And that Father G ran okay. Was no match for the two favorites ahead of him. Tank Commander, though, Donnie Von Hemel for Team Dreamwalkin', and Edward Cox bred wins at $7.60. There was a couple of maiden races, too, and I that caught my eye. There was an Astrology Filly, a Louisiana bred for Dallas Stewart. This is Valine Farms. How about 39-1 yesterday for Dallas? Yeah. In the fourth, the maiden special, big time, almost $80. So Dallas fans and Lobred fans, you did okay, right? So that was the Churchill action. And then later, Paulo Lobo, who I, whenever Paulo Lobo wins, I smile. I've always been a fan. Farda Amiga, going back. Ivar, a Brazilian-bred wire-to-wire in that allowance, ninth as well. Paid $30, $30.80. With Joe Talamo, who after a really, after a stutter start to the meet, has kind of found a groove. Talamo starting to win more often, and he's been going up to Indiana, too, on the off days. So, slip that in. A couple of other pieces of news in case we could reach for, go ahead and reach for Marty. And yesterday I sort of prefaced that Pennsylvania HBA, the Horse Breeders Association, they let it be known that there's not going to be any decrease in the Breeders' Awards at all, despite everything that's gone on. So I thought that was awfully nice. And they've tried to go out of their way during the situation to help everybody as much as they can. Swing back, and as we wait for Marty, yesterday here, Radikowski. How about that performance after kind of a weird start and ends up taking control and wiring as the second choice? 470, just a six-horse field, but Mrs. Orb for Mike Maselli comes second and just missed at 17-1 to at least shake up the exotics a little, but Radikowski, who hadn't been seen since last year, ran motion for Gary Broad, and the Drosselmeyer mare, now six, starts her season with a stake win in the critical eye. There was also that nice win from George Weaver's Go Sapper filly, so darn hot, last seen down in Florida, and just under Manny Franco. went off a 3-2 and was ridden like a 1-2 and won off by a half a dozen. I haven't checked the figs at all, but that was impressive. So that was in New York, and we'll talk to Dave Grenig later and Jay Pribman. Right now, their colleague Mart D. McGee.
Hey Bick, how are you, Bick?
Mart, good to connect. And you thought you were going to get the day off, but no, there's good racing at Churchill, and let's face it, I don't know if I've asked you this question, and of course the Derby, for September, Luz, Mike Luzzi walking by. What's your impression of how this, how this Triple Crown season at least starts off, and what is going to unfold after Saturday with a refashioned second half Derby trail?
Well, Luzzi was my right fielder, for a few years back in Maryland. So,
say hello. I love it on the softball.
Hello to the Luz bucket. By the way, speaking of the Derby, it was on the news this morning here in Louisville that the governor of Kentucky has a proposal from Churchill Downs as to how they intend to have fans at the Derby. A friend of mine who's in the ticket business and is, just worried sick about how it's all going to play out, theorizes that maybe they're going to use some plexiglass between all these boxes, which I had not thought of. I don't know if you've heard of that, but just all kinds of ways you could conjure up to how to effectively social distance these people. There's all kinds of problems inherent with the crowd like we have at the Derby, and if you were to go ahead and pick and choose who gets to come and who doesn't get to come, how do you do that? Who gets left out? Blah blah blah. So. Anyway, apparently the governor is going to look it over. They're going to enter into discussions with Churchill as to how they're going to do it. Things might even change within the next, still more than 2.5 months. till we get there. But obviously, a lot of planning has to go into a day like this. So that's where we stand with that. I would expect maybe next week or the week after that for them to come out with some kind of tentative plan as to how they intend to do the fans for the Derby. You're asking me who do I like in the Belmont
Well, both. We'll get you a Belmont opinion, but the general appearance of how things are sort of morphing and taking shape, including the story from this week with the refashioned Audubon Oaks coming back at Ellis and the Ellis Park Derby being installed as a Derby trail point race that folds in. I mean, these next Saturdays, I mean, starting next week at Thistledown, I mean, it's like the calendar has sort of shifted, completely back to, call it February, and we're going to have, February, March, April, as June, July, August. It's very strange.
Yeah. Relative to the other sports, Vic, we're doing great. I mean, we are doing
fantastic. I think so, too.
Yeah, we've patched it up. We've got handle way up at various tracks. So baseball, they're about to kill each other. And basketball, what are they going to do? And hockey, all of it. The NFL, college football, what are they all going to do? We in horse racing have a plan. We've got, like you said, all these Derby preps. We've just kind of shifted them by months, replaced this with that. And I think it's been great. The Belmont, obviously, could have come up better. It's just a matter of circumstances and factors like, Baffert's course is falling by the wayside, et cetera. So,
true.
I like Tisdale over Pneumatic with the Farmington Road slugging up for a piece. I think the Tappet to Win's going to set a fast pace, but he's not going to get away with it. Tisdale is going to trip out beautifully. Hey, 370 is what I said on our video, Pribman and I did, Wednesday. And, yeah. With Pneumatic running a big race for Steve, I think the fact that he has Pneumatic in there as opposed to Basin and anything else kind of says a little something. And then Farmington Road, I really liked a couple of his races this spring, including the one kind of sneaky good, I thought, in the Arkansas Derby. So, the Belmont's, I mean, we bottom line is we're doing better than the other folks.
I won't argue at all, and I'm just looking over the rest of the action, and really the only Midwestern shipper, technically, I guess, is Amos, right, with No Parole, the Louisiana bred for the Woody Stevens. Asmussen a little bit, Shoplifted in Echo Town.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really looked over much of the... much of the card at all. I've been busy with the Churchill and everything, but I'm doing some Gulfstream this morning, as a matter of fact. So,
wow.
Mike Welsh has vacated the spot, and I'm plugging in for him on occasion, but remotely, of course. I'm here in my house in Louisville. But normally this week they have the Tech Sutton planes flying out of here with a bunch of them for all those races. I don't know why that didn't happen.
I also should know, too, because we'll get to it this morning, casual in the Acorn for Asmussen. And this is a filly we kind of latched onto, both she and Volatile, that are closely related. And they both kind of emerged at the same time over the winter and early spring. And casual 3-1 in here with Gamin for Baffert. And there's a couple of others. Cassie returns with Perfect Alibi as well. So we'll talk that over. I know Jay wrote an Acorn advance too. So I'm anxious for Jay's thoughts later. But there's another Midwestern invader, so to speak, with Asmussen's barn. I just saw Toby Sheets, actually, minutes ago. Toby, Steve says he just sends him off to Toby, and Toby takes over from there when it comes to the Asmussen runners in New York.
Are you anxious for Jay's comments, or are you eager for Jay's comments?
I would say I'm eagerly anxious.
Okay. Well, I don't know why you would be anxious. I would see why you would be eager.
Go ahead. Anxious, not in an angst-ridden way, just anxious and looking forward to. There we go. There we go. Let's look forward to your thoughts.
Yeah, anxious kind of implies a little bit of fretfulness to me. But anyway,
if Jay's up already, and he probably is at 6:25 out there. And by the way, 6:25 Pacific means that this third race is not far off. Have you been taking in any Ascot?
Just a little bit. Yeah, just a touch. Not none today, but the first couple days I did. Yeah.
Well, and I'm just I want to see where Wesley. Wesley's horse in here. This is the Norfolk, and Wesley is 8-1 right now with Golden Pal. This is the Lady Shipman Uncle Mo colt that Andre Etzeni rides. Dottori and Mark Johnston have the Godolphin favorite, Eye of Heaven, who's even money. Lipizzaner as well. He'll make a hell of a stallion. Lipizzaner, also an Uncle Mo, and this is for Coolmore, 3-1, your second choice. And we'll keep an eye, and Casey, let me know when they're getting close for the third at Royal Ascot. We'll let that run. Yeah, they're still milling behind the gate. Marty, let's dive into the stakes action tomorrow. And the Wise Dan, it really came up nice. I mean, 11-horse field. This is the grade two, 200,000. They're going to go a mile and a 16th. And obviously factor this is the horse to beat for Cox. But if he's vulnerable at all, you've got about five within, I'd say, a length or two.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to run with him? That's kind of the problem for the everybody. Got Ritzy AP. He's some speed. I don't know if he's as fast as.
Yeah, he'll stay with him.
And you've got this horse, Emmaus, number 8, the Irish bred, who's first time gelding, and he's fresh, and he's shown some speed in some other races. But otherwise, Steve, if this horse catches a flyer, factor this, and Bridgemo gets to sit on him. You know, and walk the dog, it's probably going to be all over. 8-5, that's a pretty good line on it. That's about right. Maker's got three horses in against them, and Grand Motion has the two inside horses, so that's half of the other 10 right there. I guess among Mike's better horses, Aquaphobia comes off that pretty good race at Gulfstream, got a 1-on-1 buyer, career high. So I guess he would be one of those. And March of the Arch won this race last year with just a sensational late run, and he's shown himself capable in these types of races. So I would think that unless factor this is to give up the ghost, then March of the Arch is probably one to win it. Do we need to watch this race, or what are you doing?
I'll slap. There's been I haven't seen it yet officially. I couldn't tell, but one of the fillies was left behind the gate. They don't mess around. They were already delayed by one recalcitrant filly, and then they blindfolded and everything else. Here we go from the Norfolk.
Macho Pride fast into stride, includes the likes of Golden Pal, who blazes along for Wesley Ward to the forefront running performance with Macho Pride, and then the orange jacket of Jojo Rabbit showing pace. At this stage, Eye of Heaven settles just behind the speed, with over on the far side the Learjet, reading back to midfield by the likes of Corporation in the green sleeves. Then behind these, the checks of Andronicus Bow, back to midfield finds Imperial Force just ahead of Ventura Tormentor. At this stage, Lipizzaner is slightly taken off his legs, and last of all is the debutant Papal B. So down towards halfway, Golden Pal setting a brisk pace. Eye of Heaven away to the left-hand side in company with the Learjet. They've now moved on by a couple of lengths from Macho Pride, staying on his Imperial Force, but it's still out in front. Golden Pal, who's fined a little bit more. The Learjet's moved into second. Eye of Heaven can't go on. Lipizzaner's making late gains, but out in front and keeping up the pace is Golden Pal. Still coming is the Learjet. Golden Pal's getting weary. The Learjet is coming, and the Learjet got up close home. Golden Pal in everywhere bar the last 20 yards or so. Imperial Force next. Lipizzaner couldn't go the pace early. Little punch of the air by Oisin Murphy. Michael Bell's horse has just run down Andrea Azzini by half a length on the line. Took a long time for the bus.
Well, there, oh boy, oh boy, Wesley within a jump or two.
God.
Jesus.
Is Wesley over there? Is he, you know, or did he have to stay?
You know what? I haven't been, I don't know, actually. That's a great question. He would have had to have, I'm going to say no, just because, right, wouldn't he have had to have quarantined and everything else that went with that? I haven't been following that closely enough. 13-6, the Learjet, your winner.
And this horse was 9-1 for Wesley. Wow.
And boy, when he quickened about 200 yards out, he was pulling away, and that Learjet, that was a very, O'Shane Murphy's had a terrific stand. This is Qatar Racing, Michael Bell, as mentioned, a Prince of Lear colt, and Murphy stayed just in contact, and everybody else was basically run off their feet, essentially, at Senny and the Uncle Mo were trying to power home. Wow. Nice effort, though. That's the best so far of Wesley. That was, what, the third Wesley, third or fourth Wesley runner? And, that's too bad. All right. Marty McGee with us. And, Marty, let's get back to the card, the Audubon. We've got three-year-olds going a mile and an eighth on the grass a little earlier. That goes as the sixth. And, Mike Stidham, Pixelate, one of those good two-year-olds that he had last year.
Well, this is one of the new stakes that we're having at the spring meet at the rescheduled, reconfigured kind of deal. You know, we had the three or four of them on the same day that they ran the Matt Wynn, and this is one, the first running the Audubon. I just realized I chalked out pretty bad here, Vic. I took Field Pass. I kind of have a soft spot for him after he hit for me on the 1st of February down at Gulfstream, won a 12-1. It was part of a multi I had. So anyway, he ran pretty creditably in the War Chant, which is one of the aforementioned new stakes we had on the 23rd of May. Got away bad, pretty much lost all chance, and still closed resolutely to get beat only 2.25 by the winner, Smooth Like Straight, for Michael Whitey, Don't Call Me Whitey, McCarthy. So there's a number of returnees in here, including, as you mentioned, Pixelate, the runner-up in that race, for Stidham, and I would guess that's going to be the key race toward this, and I'm going to go with Field Pass.
Field Pass, 2-1, 7-2 for Pixelate. Looking up and down here, Fenwick Station, Caninos for Brad Cox, Rusty, Bama Breeze, Natural Power for Cassie. All right, I concentrated on the Wise Dan. What else from this card caught your eye, Mart? What was what ended up being your play of the day?
Let's see here. I'm looking at my picks now. Got a horse in the last called Big Dreaming. Who's that? Not really. I got this stuff up here, Vic. Big Dreaming.
Big Dreaming. That's Catalano with Tyler. 8-5, though.
Yeah. Blinkers on. I mean, boy, can I eat some more chalk or what? What else?
This is not a typical Marty, set of tabs, I got to tell you.
Yeah. I closed nicely in the 6-3 with the Joe Talamo. Did you watch the last race at Churchill last night? That was a hell of a ride he gave that horse. Paid $30. Paulo Lobo.
I mentioned that race a little ago, and it seems like Joe is kind of, after a very, an eyebrow-raising start to the meet, it seems, I think those trip, the trip to Indiana didn't hurt him either.
He's a young guy, he just wants to ride, he just wants to do stuff. You know, he got tired of riding two or three a day in California, that's why he went to Oaklawn, and now here in Kentucky, they just bought a house here in Louisville, and, I'm telling you, there's so many good riders here, though. I don't want to single him out, just, you know, appear to favor him. But he's one of many extremely talented riders. He gave that horse last night just a terrific ride.
Marty McGee, didn't look at Sunday yet. Anything of note on the Sunday card?
It was a little bit
before we go
compared to some of the other cards we've had, but, you know, it's been a great meet. They're extending it by one day. They were going to start Ellis on Sunday the 28th, but they closed out with the Foster and the Florida Lee matching, Midnight Bisou and Serengeti Empress. I broke the news yesterday of Seeking the Soul being retired. He's out of the Foster, which will have Tom Stay Tot and By My Standards and Mr. Freeze, it looks like. Going to be a great race. So that's a week from tomorrow. Close it on the 28th. Then we go to Ellis for 4 days, July 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Then to Keeneland for the week, and then back to Ellis. So that's a, you know, you asked me about how are we doing in racing. I think it's all kind of congealed pretty nicely in terms of making do.
Exactly, exactly. Well, Mart, enjoy the weekend, and we'll have a Belmont to talk about next week as you guys start to see the finish line to this delayed Churchill meet, which has gone very well, and it's going to finish with a flourish, and then plenty more to come, and that includes Keeneland and the surprise Keeneland meet at Ellis Park.
Take it easy, Beck. Thanks for having me.
Nah, thanks. DRF McGee, everybody. Marty McGee. Let's take the break right here, and we'll come back. We've got visits coming from Jay Pridman and Nick Tamaro, Dave Grenig. Haven't seen Ron. I thought would have been hanging. I've sort of saved this next slot for Ron. So we'll see if he's on the ground. I'll tell you who else I heard from, and I haven't seen him yet this morning, is Horse Health Today, Dr. Stephen Allday. I thought that Steve was going to swing by this morning. He's on the grounds now through Sunday. Said he was making literal rounds. We will take our first break and come back. We'll also reset for the next one, the Group 2 Hardwick, which features Anthony Van Dyke, certainly going to be familiar to plenty of North American players, as well as Fanny Logan, the Gosden mare. And what was it? I'm trying to remember. What was the race? I got to look at this as we go to the break. And of course, Van Dyke, third last year behind Bricks and Mortar and United. But Fanny Logan came over. I guess it was the Philly and Mare Turf last year. And I mean, I took a fancy to her. She kind of a striking filly. I said mare. She's a four-year-old. And she ended up fourth, beating three lengths to Iridesa. And Basilica. Boy, you know, it's funny. You look at the turf and you look at the Philly and Mare turf, and both Basilica and United, they both ran such courageous races. Unbelievable to be second. Fanny Logan was 10-1 that day. She did get a tightener for this at Haydock. In the Pinnacle, the Group 3. Let's take a break, and we'll figure out what's next when we come back at the races, live from Belmont Park. Beautiful, beautiful morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice
horses sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
I'm good, you all right?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtib.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races back at Belmont Park, and it's funny. It was busier yesterday in terms of people hanging around and media. There's one lone. I'm gonna say two sets of media filming and doing cutaways, but it seemed a little bit more active. Yesterday, in terms of people filtering through. One constant, though, is Shug McGahee and Christophe Clément that swing through here and set up with each, you know, with each set of training hours at the main track. And that's one thing we've counted on and enjoyed. And for many years, even under these odd circumstances, and let me help Casey here. I'm assuming you're using this one number wise. Ron can't. You know, the agents. I didn't realize that Ron was not around. I knew they were doing the draws via Zoom. I've tuned in on a couple of them, and it's been fun. But I didn't realize that Ron wasn't even in town. So he's in Kentucky, so we'll get to him. And I will tell you that today, you know, even with the you know, the media side of things, it is very limited. And they, you know, you heard from Pat McKenna yesterday, and they're being very stringent. They're not letting any, you know, the owners. In fact, I saw, you know, safety steward Tim Kelly yesterday, this morning. Tim came and knocked on the car window and said, "Are you here as an owner?" I said, "No, I'm doing the show." He said, "Well, all right." He said, "I know you probably got both badges, but you know, no owners. They've actually caught a couple of sneaky owners that have tried to come and see their horses. I mean, one of the real pleasures of being involved in the game is, you know, is being around for the training hours. It's one of the questions that's coming up most often when it comes to Saratoga, and they're working on every possible contingency and option. So, as we've said all along, they're hopeful that the first wave of reintroduction would include owners having an opportunity to come watch races and perhaps even training. So we'll as you heard yesterday from Pat McKenna, that you know, they're going to do everything in their power to make that happen. Ron Anderson joins us, and it's one of the great Belmont Week traditions. Even on an untraditional Belmont Week, we get a chance to get a preview from Ron. Ron, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good. It one, you know, the one proviso on being, you know, being good and being cheery about being here is that, you know, so many people that you look forward to seeing at these kinds of gatherings just aren't part of it. But, you know, for now, we're all, you know, we're all in the same kettle of fish.
Look, you know, looking at all other sports, though, we're extra fortunate that we've been participating and all, because just look, you know, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, there's nothing going on practically. You know, there's some NASCAR that's starting up and this, that, and the other. Golf has started back, but we're lucky enough that we've been open on one form or another for quite a while now. It's all good.
Well, for you, and I, when you just let me know that, you know, we'd have to call you, I knew that they were doing the draws, you know, via Zoom, and I've tuned into a couple of them. It's kind of entertaining, but I didn't realize, you know, you were back in Kentucky. And so talk about you know, doing the arrangements and having to do everything by phone in terms of, I mean, you do a lot of the work anyway on the phone, but has this scenario been, you know, any more arduous and any more difficult in terms of booking mounts?
Steve, you know, the whole world's changed because of this, and it's really changed our end of the business. You know, I'm a kind of a when I lived in Hong Kong with Gary Stevens, I'm a four eyes guy as far as trainers are concerned and assistants and exercise riders and stuff. I enjoy coming out in the morning. I enjoy, you know, the kibitzing with everybody and the interaction. Well, that's pretty much all gone. Every racetrack has a Zoom draw, which I think is good. But the fact that I can't be boots on the ground and be at Belmont Park, live in Floral Park, have an apartment there, and that I'm 800, 900 miles away at a, you know, beautiful house Nancy and I have in Kentucky. We have a boat access on the Ohio River now. It's all fun, but it's not the same. It's not the same game. I'm not down seeing my riders, you know, Joel and Johnny in between races. They're calling before they ride. They're calling after. They give me a little input. I don't need a lot sometimes, but just anything negative usually is best for me. But it's a different ballgame, you know, texting, phone calls, the this, the that. Hoping, like you have said about owners and stuff, getting on the grounds at Saratoga, we're all just hoping for that, because I think that puts us back on the grounds at Saratoga. But at this point in time, everything, like the whole world, is kind of up in the air.
Now, you mentioned both of your riders, and, of course, the first point of reference when we talked to Ron Anderson has been Joelle. The opportunity to pick up the book for Johnny, Ron, a lot of people, I think, have noticed what a good period that Johnny, a really strong period of riding here from Johnny. And it's funny, I hadn't really connected the dots, not that he wasn't getting, mounts as good, quote-unquote, that you're getting him with Angel. But it does feel like Johnny, as the winter was winding down, really got into a groove, and I'm not going to say recaptured youth or whatever, but it feels like Johnny is very healthy and riding with a real focus.
I had the pleasure of working for riders as they got older. Fernando Toro to begin with, and then Jerry Bailey as he got older, and I've been around older riders. And what happens, Steve, and the game well enough, and most of your listeners are avid horse racing people, they understand this bit of physicalness or talent that they lose that depletes as they get older. They make up with their brain and their mind, and lots of times they just outthink other guys. And I think Johnny, even though he's in the best of condition, and the one thing that people don't understand probably, Johnny basically is never along the lines of Pat Day or Shoemaker of yesteryear. He's never had any trouble with his weight. He's a natural lightweight.
That's
he
true.
No reducing or a hot box or anything that lots of other riders have to deal with these days. He's a natural lightweight, eats pretty much a diet of what he wants. He's light, he doesn't have to endure that, which can wear on guys as they get older. So I think he's in a body that's probably a half a dozen years younger than the normal jockey at his age would be. And he's a delight to work for so far. Like I say, when I went to work for Gary Stevens, I thought he'd be screaming at me every day of the week because he's an intense and high strung guy. Johnny so far has been a delight. I'm fortunate because Joelle is just like amazingly the same all the time. He's never too high and he's never too low, and he doesn't bark. He understands I try and do the best I can, and I think things over before I make a decision. And Johnny so far has been the same. Is that they're both the utmost professionals, and lucky enough that I have these two.
Well, I mean, Joelle is famously famously affable and constantly, he's always got that smile on his face and grin. And I don't think I've ever seen him, with a scowl or, a clenched jaw even. One time?
I saw him get upset with a jockey at Gulfstream Park, where it was Luca Panici. He was trying to... No. Who was it? I forgot who it was a second. It's been a few years, though. But the guy was halfway grandstanding when he went by him, like he was trying to get his number taken down or he's trying to get him dazed or whatever. And I walked down to the path, as you know what the path is, to go back to the jock's room. And I was talking to him, and the kid kind of walked up on his left side. And Joelle looked at me, and he put his finger up like this, like, "What? Give me 1 minute here." And I swear to God, Steve, he started screaming at this kid in Spanish. And I couldn't believe, because I had no reference to him being so upset ever before. He went on for about 2 minutes with this kid. And I've never seen him that like that before or after. But I saw him get mad one time, and it was not pretty. So, yeah, he's as level-headed as they come. And, I think, in a competitive sport and a heat of the moment type sport. It's very good for them to be level headed, so they can make their split second decisions. And going 35 miles an hour on a horse and have to make, that's like people want to criticize rides. He rode them bad. I went through this with somebody the other day. There's bad rides, and then there's unlucky rides, and they're two different things. The mindset of lots of times is they have the right idea, but it just was unlucky. It didn't materialize. Then there's bad. You get the occasional bad ride, but with good riders, they make less mistakes than the other riders, and that's what makes them good. They all make mistakes. It's not an exact science. So, fortunate for me.
I'm saying hi to Pat Kelly, and no parole? Very nice. Pat is handling no parole for Tom Amos and Maggie Moss, and that's a big, good-looking Louisiana bred. Right? How about that? Ron Anderson with us. And Ron, before we talk about the weekend and get some impressions going in, you and I exchanged notes this morning. You were in the car and you heard Tony Black from yesterday. And you had, I thought, some comments that we'll get him to Tony. But, this storyline with the riding crop as well as anybody and the way, it's being discussed. And share those thoughts with everybody.
Well, Steve, I've been approached numerous times. My thoughts, my feelings, this to that, from fans, from trainers, from owners, from press. And my first comment on the whole thing is, I'm not going to dictate any policy on what should or shouldn't be, and you shouldn't either if you've never sat on a racehorse or you have never ridden a race, because it's a completely, I can tell you about what I've observed and what I've got, the input I've got from riders over the years, but I'm going to call him your man, Tony Black, because he basically was absolutely, positively the most fascinating write-on comments on the whole thing from A to Z yesterday. It couldn't have been any better spelt out for a layman, for a professional, even for another jockey to listen. I think was absolutely fascinating. And I told you in a text, we need to go ahead and take that interview and disperse that to some powers that be so they can understand exactly what, because he broke it down just, I thought, magnificently. It was really a really amazing interview, I thought.
Well, you got a guy that has ridden tens of thousands of horses in the afternoon and countless more in the mornings. And it's amazing, as I said with Tony yesterday, and this is the complaint that Johnny and Terry Meeks have, these authorities and these governing bodies, as it were, they're pretending to have the guild and have the riders represented in these discussions, but they're not at all. They're doing whatever they want that they think is going to placate a group of people that are never going to be satisfied with anything that we do as an industry. And so bending over backwards and then putting the horse and riders in peril with these idiotic strike counts, it's to me it's a fool's errand, and I count on Tony and Mig to edify everybody and refocus the discussion, because the whole discussion is out of whack. Ron? Did we lose Ron?
Yes. No, I'm here.
Oh, there we go.
No, I'm here.
All right. I thought we lost you there. Ron, let's take a look at the weekend. And hadn't heard from you about the whole concept, the way this Triple Crown season has been refashioned. Just some overall thoughts about Saturday through October, essentially, with the three classics and then a bunch of new Derby Trail 3-year-old exclusive events.
Steve, you know, the whole world is in turmoil, and we are in turmoil, too. And I think they just pieced it together as well as they could, and I take my hat off to all the different places that had to do, let's say, the most unorthodox, you know, rescheduling of things. You know, it is what it is. It's not easy what they've had to do, but, you know, we'll trudge on. The last race and the longest race is now the first race and the shortest race, and at this point, you know, it is what it is, so we'll trudge on.
Has it been made more difficult? And of course, you know, nothing's going to make it more difficult than losing a horse like Nadal, frankly. But you know, that obviously, when it comes to Joel, Ron, let's pause for just 1 second. And actually, I'll let this race from Ascot to run a little bit. They're going to go a mile and a half in the Hardwick, so we'll wait maybe till they approach Swindley Bottom. Just fun to say, Swindley Bottom. But you know, you lose a horse like Nadal, and you know, you gotta pause for a minute and sort of then refocus and figure out where you go from there.
Yes, you know, it's been a tough couple weeks losing Nadal. Obviously, he was a magnificent special horse that was probably one of the favorites for the race. But you know what? This business, you gotta kind of, whatever end of it you're in, you gotta just kind of, you know, dust yourself off and pick yourself up. And we're still kind of scrambling to find the right one. You know, I've been lucky enough to win 4 derbies, of which 3 of them I ended up on the day of the race and hadn't ridden. Well, Orb was, I rode as a 2-year-old, but wasn't on him in his 3-year-old year until the day of the derby. So there's a lot of luck involved, and there's a lot of things that are going to happen between now and derby time. So
exactly,
it'll be interesting to see what happens here.
Let's pick up the Hardwick, and then we'll get some ideas from Ron. And